the mid-90s garage, you know. When did it kind of morph into two-step? Because I know that Spoonie and Dream Team had a lot to do with that, I'd say.
Yeah, the Dream Team thing was... Well, them two made a couple of tracks, Destiny and a few others, in 97, which were... You'll probably find, actually, if we went into... Right, if we searched it and went into Discord, they probably made them a bit earlier than that. But back then, tracks took ages to build and break. It's not like now where everyone knows about it overnight. They were like really early two-step tracks, and then the Dream Team made that track called The Theme, and that was really one of the first two-step tracks, and then it just evolved from that. And I didn't really like it. I like that track, to be honest. And the Dem 2, they'd done an EP. I can't remember what it was called now. And it had four tracks on it. Blue Label. I just remember there was like this blue wizard thing on the label, and I liked all the tracks on there, but they were really kind of like out there from what the garage scene was at that time, because it was really nice, soulful, bumpy, driving kind of 4/4 stuff. And that's what I was into. Like 1997 for me was my favourite year. And then I was playing back to back with Pied Piper like a lot then, and he started playing a lot of the two-step stuff. And so I was doing like two or three tracks of 4/4, and he was doing two or three tracks of two-step, and it didn't really work. And I was like, something needs to happen here, and we need to work out what's what I like from this music. So it wasn't like just downloading stuff, and like you had to go and find it in the shops. Mm. In the end, I found like an edge of that two-step sound that I liked, and then it went on to being like the Steve Gurley, Zed Byers, LB, Groove Chronicles, that sort of sound, which then I kind of developed my name around playing that. I didn't ever play commercial stuff.
Right.
And it worked for me, it benefited me massively, because that's the direction I took. But the 4/4, that was the sound I really liked. But people just stopped making it, literally. Like, because they saw the commercial pull of it, the music. Because in 98, it was like, boom, you know what I mean? Like, I was doing 3 gigs on a Friday, 3 gigs on a Saturday, 2 on a Sunday, like 2 or 3 in a week. And you were turning down work, but you would do... Like, say I'd Coliseum on a Friday. On certain nights, we'd have 2,000 in there. We'd have about 1,200 on a regular every Friday. We'd have, so you'd go there, you'd have the Gas, you'd have Ku Klub in Leicester Square, you'd have...
Bagley's?
One Nation would be doing the Rex.
Right.
And they were like main clubs. Right. Then you'd have all the other little offshoot bars, like you'd probably have bars and clubs in Enfield. But they were all full. But everyone just went out raving there.
Yeah.
And Bagley's was more on a Saturday. I think it was more of a Saturday gig.
Yeah. Really, you had Sunday sessions, didn't you? So that was like people going clubbing. And
we used to do an after party on a Sunday at Channel Club. So you finish on a Saturday, then you go to a Sunday, and then people started Frog and Nightgown.
Grays as well.
Grays, sorry, that's what I meant to say. People started doing Grays. And then Frog and Nightgown was previous to that. That's where it really started on the Saturday morning. But Grays was, that was an experience, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was on the road from out. Brought up.
Yeah.
So I used to go to training sometimes and see people queuing up. Yeah. And I'd be like, oh. I used to go to Coliseum a lot as well. Yeah. So I used to go to your club night. Because one of the directors at Palace down in Coliseum.
Yeah, Rez.
Me plus 4.
Yeah. Yeah,
so he's going there all the time.
He's encouraging you guys to go on the piss and come up for training.
Yeah, they own the club there, Crystals.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what they own. They own that, yeah.
And then we had Bruce Dyer as well, who's played at Palace. And
yeah, he played for me, I think.
So he DJed quite a bit as well.
He played for Twice as Nice a lot, didn't he?
Yeah.
Hey, like, if you went raving then, if you wanted to fit in with the demographic of what a garage raver was, like, as I said, like, I didn't let anyone in with jeans in my club. So you'd have to go out, and you'd look like a gangster.
Mm.
Like, you'd trousers and shirt, and like people would go the whole mile. And like we had people that used to come in, there was a crew of people used to come in the bowler hats. R.I.P. to Bradley, who passed last week. So it's I'm quite glad I was on this side of it where I could wear what I wanted, because like I wouldn't have had no money left.
But you've seen
all the employees every week.
But you've seen it evolve though, like literally from day to day. I mean, you were DJing from when? 94. Yeah, 94. And so you.
Well, actually, I started DJing in 92 at a club in Chesham. It's not there anymore. on a, it was a student night, and one of my, some guy that I used to go to college with called Sammy, and he just went out to the owner and said, he's a better DJ than your DJ. And he went, oh, okay, tell him to bring his records next Tuesday then. And we went down there, I didn't know what I was doing. And then the guy just liked me, and I ended up being the resident DJ there for two and a bit years, £25 a week, 5 hours every week, every Friday, every Saturday.
But you know, like we were talking about apprenticeships.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You learn your craft.
Yeah. I learned how to be a DJ, I learned how to mix, I learned that starting at 9 o'clock, you can't play them tunes that everyone wants to hear at nine, even if you want to hear them. You've got to find stuff that no one even knows about to build the club, because then you realise between 9 and 11, no one's coming in.
Weren't you the first person to play Oh No?
Yeah.
Mega just gave it to you, didn't he? Just gave you the...
They were... They'd come down on... Well, they came down every week. I was like the person that gave them... The first person that actually gave them a platform. Gave them a break. They were just told everywhere else and then go away sort of thing. But like, they were from around the corner. So it was good for me to have them in the club because they were... It was like their area. They protected it. It's a bit like, yeah, this is our manor. So this is our club. I supported them. They supported me. It worked in a good way. And he came down one night and he literally leant over. Did you ever go to the Coliseum?
I've been three times.
Remember when you looked at the stage? You looked at the DJ booth. There was a little stage in front.
That's right.
And I remember he stood up on there and he leant over. There was quite a long grat and he said, play that. I said, what is it? He goes, just play it. He goes, we just finished it. And they just finished it and they cut the dub plate. Like that day, and they gave it to me, and I played it, and it just went, the whole club went bonkers, and he just went, yeah. So, and that was it.
So you gave them that platform?
Yeah, well, they put themselves where they were off the radio and stuff. Like the Super Sundays, I think it was called, on Delight FM, they used to do it every Sunday. That was crazy. Like crazy. Like, we'd advertise just on the Sunday on Delight FM, and it would pull. Like, they'd done a Delight FM launch party at the Coliseum, and... Obviously, at the time, I knew what I was doing. I was established in what I was doing. Like, I knew what worked, what didn't work, and like I'd learned from mistakes. It's like, yeah, don't put that DJ, do that. And he came in and said, I want to do the Delight FM launch party. It was him and Colin. And I was like, okay, yeah, cool. He said, what's it like? Because I was just going to use all our own DJs. And I was kind of like, okay. It's like, all right, I need to put some people in the main room. Yeah, yeah, but no, we don't need anyone big. We don't need anyone big. Like, just a couple of names, and then we'll fill the rest. I'm like, okay. So how many people were expecting? He said, I don't know, 1,200. I was like, okay, so that meant, in my head, I'm kind of like demeaning them. And I'm like, well, that means like we might get nine. If I'm getting like six on a bad night, we might get nine. We might get 12 if we're lucky. And the night came and we had 1,800 people turn up. We didn't have enough security, didn't have anything. And that's when I knew the power of them. That's when I respected them already because I was already booking them. But when I saw that, I was like, geez, like, this is thing. And I remember we were at the door and the county, remember it was like the ship going, as you went in Coliseum and there was like the booth in the middle. And Mega stopped the door and he goes, we're putting the money up. I said, and then the owner, the manager, Hulisi, he's like, we can't do it, Mega. We're putting the money up, we can't do it. And he went, bang, and he slapped him. He goes, we're fucking putting the money up, £25 and no one comes in. And he's like, oh, Martin, we can lose all our customers. And I was like, okay. I said, look, we'll do whatever it was for our members. Mm-hmm. And not one person about the money. People were just throwing the money in the thing. So I was like, yeah, cool. We had a good night that night.
Can you imagine it?
But that was the start of them. And they're still doing their thing now. So they're still like, they're a global brand now, really, aren't they? So yep. Like, fair play to them.
Yeah.
Meg is the smartest man I've ever met, as well. I have to say that.
He did rattle Spoonie as well, didn't he? Some of the comments that you made about the way that the scene has progressed or changed.
Yeah, but no one supported them. Like, everyone blamed them for everything. Everyone blamed me for everything. I was banned from Eros.
Really?
Yeah.
No one gets banned from Eros.
I was banned from Eros. I was banned from Eros. I was banned from Bagley's. And I was banned from... I can't remember another club somewhere. And it turned out that I ended up doing a party at Eros. Do you remember when there was a drive-by shooting there?
Yes.
Yeah. My party was a week after. So like no one came. Like everyone that was getting booking into the hotels were getting told by the cab drivers, don't go there. So, like, Dorman got shot there last week in the drive-by. So it's like it killed me. But the girl or the woman that was in charge of Eros at the time, she showed me a fax. I won't say who it's from because like, I can't be bothered with the problems now. But it was from a promoter and it said, like we are putting all of our dates from, I think it was Lumina Leisure at the time. So it wasn't that club, it was aimed at, it was aimed at the head office, if Martin Arno is allowed to perform in Eros. And she said that, obviously I've taken a notice of it because you're venting here.
Wow.
Because they blamed me for playing like dark music and supporting the wrong element, i.e. So Solid. And everything now. But
they,
now
they were box office.
Yeah, but now they're pop stars.
It's different at the time, isn't it?
Yeah,
people that's working through. People always trying to pull people back. Well, I mean, we were just talking about before when, you know, certain players get blacklisted going to different places.
Well,
a manager will phone up another club saying, right, don't touch him because he's this, that, and the other.
And it happens. It happens
all the time.
You know, you had it. We're not going to mention which manager, but you've had it.
Yes, I've had it before. Yeah.
But this is what I don't understand. Like, how.
People, you know what it is? People only do it out of fear.
Yeah, it's fair, right. And it's
the,
yeah.
End of the day, right? I was running a black club in South London. I came from nowhere. No one knew who I was. I was in the right place at the right time.
Right. Something I wanted to ask you about. Steve Jackson.
Yep.
For me, I remember growing up listening to Kiss back in the day. Had it not been for him, I probably wouldn't know much about Garrett.
Absolutely.
What was he like? What is he like, shall I say?
I only met him a few times, to be honest. But he sacrificed his career, basically, to play Todd Edwards tunes on Kiss.
It's a big gamble, though, because I kind of see him as like the Rodigan of UK garage, do you know what I mean? Because, you know...
But he never done any... As soon as he left Kiss, he was finished. That's what I mean. He was blacklisted from... You know what we're talking about?
Yeah.
To me, he seemed like he was blacklisted from radio because he never got... He was amazing. On radio.
Oh, I remember.
The charisma of him, everything. Like, you listen to The Breakfast Show for him.
Mm. Yeah.
But what he was doing, like, when you have the bed for like, you to talk over, he was playing Todd Edwards, Save My Life.
Right.
And they kept, and he would, like, extend it. So it'd be, like, from 15 seconds. He'd just play, like, for 7 minutes and talk over it.
Mm.
And they were like, you can't do this. And then he'd, like, do another tune.
Mm.
He got sacked.
That's it's ridiculous because, as I said, had it not been for him, I wouldn't know much about this. I mean, obviously, I've got a few songs written over. There's Rick Groove, 99. You know, Scott Garcia, It's a London Thing, which was, I think, wasn't that the first garage tune that hit the charts?
97, yeah.
You know, that was incredible.
You know, going back to Rick Groove, that's like, now, it's one of the biggest festival tracks you can play.
Mm.
Like, as across genres, not just garage, like across genres.
Mm.
It's one of the biggest.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's power. The power of that track is insane.
I remember watching a documentary some time back, and I can't for the life of me remember which DJ it was, but they're saying that he went to Cardiff, and on his way back, he saw a sign for London, and someone put, "It's a London."
That was actually me that done that.
That was you! Get out of here!
No, it was actually me. Ring Scott Garcia right now. I told him recently. It was actually me. I jumped because that's the other side of my life. I'm a graffiti artist as well. And
that's right.
We came back one night and it was on the sign. It said, "Welcome to England." And it said, or "Welcome to Wales," whatever it was. And it said, "I wrote it's a London thing." Because we just come back from Cardiff. So yeah, it was actually me.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Do you do any graffiti?
No.
Any artwork, anything like that?
No, I'm not very artistic.
Well, you did a course in, to be a director of football, isn't it?
Sports directorship, yeah. So that's starting in September. So it's quite a prestigious course at the moment, especially with all the kind of new roles of sporting director coming along. So yeah, it's something I'm looking forward to.
What kind of modules are you doing with this?
I'm not sure because it hasn't started yet. I mean, they've gave us kind of a brief outline of how the course is going to run. So yeah,
looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's difficult to get back into the game, isn't it? I mean, you mentioned, you know, Steve Jackson. He's been blacklisted, and it wouldn't surprise me if he does get a role, if he does his own YouTube channel, something like that. I don't know whether that's something.
To be honest, in the garage, it'd be too late.
But music in general, I'm sure he's got a lot.
But I don't understand why he's like some of the DJs, the mainstream radio DJs, personalities, man, they got none. It's like you got like kids that have grown up through media training trying to talk like rude boys.
Yeah, that's us growing up because we didn't have social media and we had to communicate with people. You know, you see young people sitting at a table now over dinner and they're all on their phones and no one's communicating.
Yeah.
The art of communication is gone.
Yeah,
but I'm going to flip it because, you know, you're just saying about, you know, people in the industry that don't really have a personality. I see people in football you know, that have retired and they've gone on to be in the media, and they're like, you know, they're like dry toast, you know.
But I think they just do it that way, but so they don't cause any problems, so they just keep.
But look at Gary Lineker when he first presented, the first time he presented Match of the Day, like he was like a kid, like a rabbit caught in the headlights. He was awful. But look at him now; he's the highest paid presenter on the BBC. So. It just,
20 years this week, I think.
It just shows you that if someone, sometimes, it's like me with So Solid, just take someone to give you that little bit of a chance. No one nowadays in football and in music is allowed to make a mistake. Like, if I have 2-3 bad sets, oh, I might play shit, you know. Really, I can't look
at but everything's recorded by social media. But I put on social media.
If you're a manager, and you have 3 bad games, your job's on the line.
Yeah, that's exactly the reason why I didn't really want to go into coaching. You know, do coaching badges for 3-4 years. Could last 9 months. You might not even get a job.
But it's terrible because there's no. Like no one's given a chance.
No.
Like everyone makes a mistake. We'll go out here and make a mistake when we're driving, do whatever. But no one's allowed to make a mistake in the DJing, being a baller, like Raheem Sterling yesterday missed 2 chances.
Yeah.
It's like, you had enough day. Like, you'll score 25 this season, so what? And you still won. But they won't. They won't see them in City won. Oh, yeah, well, he should have done this and he should have done that. No, he's a human being. He made a mistake. That's the reality of it. He might have had problems at home. No one gives anyone, like, an opportunity anymore. It's like, you're scrutinised within an inch of your life.
Yeah.
And that's it. But I've got a set on the internet that I didn't even put up. And someone pointed out to me, like, the comments on it. And I read through them. I was like, wow.
we're probably going to get comments. But it's just the fact that, you know, at the end of the day, you're doing what you know best. You know, and listen, music, I don't think there's a right or wrong with music. Everyone's got their own opinion and all that kind of stuff. Someone might not like Yossi. I mean, look, I've been to Eros, for example, and there's been, like, for example, an EZ set, which I haven't been too impressed with, but I think.
But then you've been there another time, and he's like.
He's smashed it, exactly. So, you know? So that's just opinions. You know, you said some people have good days, some people have bad days, and, you know, you've had a few bad days.
Bad days are good days, isn't it? But, you know.
I've had days where I turn up to a club and I can't mix a salad. It's just like, forget it, I want to go home and start again. It's probably the same
thing. Yeah, exactly.
You've got to preach it up. What's going on,
man? Mentally, you're not ready to be attuned to what you're doing.
But then you'll come out another time and, like,
exactly, just kill it straight away.
What's your worst performance?
I remember playing for Peterborough, we played Plymouth away, so we travelled down on the day. And we were 5-0 down at half time. 5-0 down at half time. Scored the best own goal ever. The diagonal came across. I tried to head it back to the keeper. It's gone straight in the top corner. Keeper's dived for it. Smashed up the net. 7 minutes to repair the net. Got dragged at half time. Me and 2 other players. Typical Barry Fry. Take 3 players off.
Whack
3 players on. And then one of the guys was so angry, he broke the window in the changing room. All the stewards came rushing in, said, "Who did it? Who did it?" The guy owned up. I got showered, went downstairs, and then about 10 minutes later, I'm just sitting there, just talking to Andy Clark, and another steward, "Which one of you two broke the window?" I'm like, "He's gone downstairs." He's like, "No, which one of you two broke the window?" I said, "Are you fucking dead?" Like, I was at the end of my tether by then. I said, "He's gone downstairs." Who are you talking to, like, leaning over me? I'm sitting down in my briefs. I'm like, nah, I can't have this. So me and him are tussling. I threw him out the changing room. And then at the end of the game, the manager's like, "What happened?" I'm like, "The police want to talk to you about, you know, the incident. He said that you broke his phone and threw two punches at him." I'm like, "No." They're like, "Oh, well, the police want to talk to you, and, you know." So the next day I had to go to Peterborough Police Station and go and give a statement, and FA charge, got hit with an FA charge, had to go in front of a panel to see whether I was going to be charged or not, and then the steward came with 2 other witnesses, 2 other stewards, and they came with 3 different stories. It's like, you couldn't make it up, to be fair.
What position would you be in? That position or having a gun pointed at you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that, there's levels. There's levels to this.
That's happened 3 times as well.
Has So you've had the three guns pointed at you, three occasions, sorry. You've had the glass almost hit you. You're like a cat, you've got nine lives, only got five left there. Blimey. Well, look, before we wrap it up, I've got a few listener questions because I asked on Twitter, and our lovely friends on Twitter decided to chime in with some questions for you guys. This is from Mr. DJ at Expat Guna. He's in America, but I think he's originally from the UK. He's an Arsenal fan, as you can tell. You're a QPR fan.
I am.
We'll touch on that in the next episode.
Okay? Yeah, we'll talk about QPR.
Have you played there, by the way?
Yeah. They had to beat us to stay up. 6-1, they beat us.
Who's playing for them?
They had Slade and Kwame up front. Mm. And then I'll smash Ludo McCloskey, put him in the back of them. They're going to lose him. So.
Well, thank you very much. You can get Andy Cole out in 95. I'm not going to answer that one. Right, he asked, for your first episode, I asked the host to name their favourite five football players that they have seen play in their lifetime and five favourite garage artists. Look forward to the show. Do you want to ask?
Garage artists. EZ, Pioneer. Martin, goes to his club all the time, for sure. Who do I like now? I like Mark Radford.
He plays more deep house.
I'm kind of into deep house at the moment. And who else? MA1?
The house again.
So I've evolved as I've gone along. So it's been like hip hop, jungle.
It's the underground house. The underground house stuff.
Oh, Jason Smythe as well, he's my mate. Spoonie's cousin.
Yeah, Jason is, yeah, I know.
What, Smythe?
Yeah,
one of my good guys.
He plays, I can't remember where last time I saw him. I saw him just before Christmas, I think.
Yeah.
But MA1, I talk to him quite regularly.
Yeah.
So I've done some artwork for him the other week as well.
Okay.
Which brand one? Top five players. Waddle. Roy Wedderly.
Ah, yes.
Paul Parker, Clive Wilson.
Player.
And
Ray Wilkins.
Nah.
Ray Wilkins was a great pro. He was there at Palace when I was the first one.
Yeah, you're saying, yeah.
Mm. I'd say maybe Lineker.
Yeah.
Because I was like just coming, like 10, around that sort of, like 8 to 12 when the '82 World Cup was on.
All right.
And then leading on to that, and that was when Lineker came through in '86, was when like the final. So that's a kind of a positive, not positive, that's like the prime memory for me is that era. So that team, either Hoddle or Lineker would be my fifth.
Difficult one to choose. Good, excellent. All right. Next question, if I find it. It is from our Leeds United supporting friend, KG. He says, let's hear if you think Nisha, What's It Gonna Be, didn't get the love it deserved. One of the most underrated garage tunes ever, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely agree. It's actually one of the tracks that if you ask someone that follows me, that they would say, yeah, Martin plays that, like most of the sets. It's, Sticky. Again, we're talking about people that didn't really get that break. Sticky has made some of the stuff he's made that has never been released is better than stuff that's in the charts now. Nisha was still is one of my favourite songs, and it is the absolute Birmingham anthem. If you want to get girls on the dance floor in Birmingham, play that.
Yeah,
100%.
Great stuff. Well, guys, hope you enjoyed watching this video. There's going to be plenty more to come with these two, and obviously me, unfortunately, because I just let them do the talking. I just butt in, whatever. Twitter handles, all that kind of stuff.
Instagram. At Liberty Lana is me on everything.
And you got any events coming up?
Yeah, this I'm at the UKG brunch this Saturday on the boat, which I'm looking forward to because that is a really good party. If you haven't been garage raving for a long time, go to the brunch. UKG brunch.
I must do it. It's
an early one. I think the boat this week is like 12 to 4. I've not done the boat. I normally do like the event. But
travel sickness pills, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's only it'd be fine. But that's a good event. I've got that. Brocky and Depp are doing a party on Friday. I think it is a Bricks and Jam. I'm there. Marcus Nasty's birthday bash on Saturday in Southend, and also on Saturday I'm at the Cancer Research Reef fundraiser at Fire and Nightbox.
Nice.
Called Destiny.
Nice. How much you guys think you're gonna
I don't know. The club holds just over 2,000, so if we can get anywhere near that, so at £10 a head, fair play.
Nice. There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And you, your man?
Sergi_B on Twitter. Just contact me there.
And you kicked ball the other day?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Played against Harvey's team. All stars, yeah. Beat them, 6-2. Took half my arm off, started tackling someone's. That's how much I wanted to win. But yeah, nothing coming up at the moment. It's quite, just got a lot of things going on in the background, trying to kind of build a foundation for where I want to get to. So
Play more Vets games though, yeah?
I don't know, man. My back was stiff. It's a little bit stiff now, so, ease into
it. When was the last time you kicked ball before that?
A year.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
But hey.
Yeah.
Right, so that was our first episode of On The Decks. We're on Twitter, @_OnTheDecks. We're also on Instagram, On The Decks. So yeah, give us a follow, hit that like, subscribe, whatever, leave a comment. Nice ones would be good, but if you don't like it, tough. So yeah, until next time, goodbye.